And then when going into high school and playing prep ball, American Legion and Sandlot ball, I played mostly as a first baseman and outfielder, preferring first base most of all. In my senior year in high school, we were kind of short of pitching, and I was asked to do a little pitching. And that's how I became a pitcher. We had an outstanding outfielder by the name of Ed Levine on our ball club who was drawing a lot of attention from scouts. And one day when I was slated to pitch, a friend of mine asked one of the scouts that had been following Ed Levine, Eddie Montague with the Boston Red Sox, to come in town quickly, wanted to see a little left-handed pitch. And on that day, I went out and pitched. It was my fifth game of ever pitching. And on that day, I struck out 17. And from that point on, the Red Sox became very interested in me as a pitcher, along with the St. Louis Cardinals and Detroit Tigers. Of course, as you know, I favored the Red Sox and went on to sign with them. Branch Rickey was a scout for the Cardinals who came in to talk with my father, trying to convince me on the Cardinals. But at that time, the Cardinals were known as a chain gang with many, many ball players. And for that reason, I wasn't too interested in the Cardinal organization. As I grew up, I was also playing with another outstanding left-hander, a fellow that I'm sure many remember, Howie Paulette. Howie signed with the St. Louis Cardinals. He and I grew up as youngsters together. We played on the same team. We played against each other later on in our later days around New Orleans before going into pro ball, and Howie was a great, outstanding ball player. We also had another left-hander who lived in our neighborhood. As a matter of fact, the whole three of us were born in the same block in New Orleans. We lived in the 1900 block of Dublin Street, and I think we're probably the only city that can boast of three major league left-handers being born in the same block. The other left-hander was Larry LaSalle, who pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates for just a short time. Upon signing with the Boston Red Sox, I was sent to Owensboro, Kentucky, where Hugh Wise was the manager. And upon reporting to that ball club, I was just a frail little thin youngster that Hugh Wise, when taking his first look at me, asked me, says, "Well, son, what are you supposed to play?" With that, I felt that my chances wouldn't be too good with that ball club, and also they had four left-hand pitchers on their staff. So I was sent to Centerville, Maryland, where I had a very good year, my first year out, winning 15 and losing 6. I was told by the Red Sox to pitch only once a week, and the manager had that type of instruction to use me only once a week. From there, I moved on to Canton, Ohio, where we had a fine ball club, had many fine ball players on that ball club, and I had a very good year there. I presently hold the earned run record in that league with a 1.59. From there, we moved into the Eastern League, where I found that league to be a very tough league with many good ball players, many that went from that league on to the majors. I, too, hold an earned run record in that league with a 1.3. We had many fine players on that ball club. At Scranton, we won the pennant by some 19.5 games, and from there, many of our fellows went on to the majors where they performed very well. During the service, I had the pleasure of playing with Blytheville, Arkansas Air Base. We won the Eastern Flying Training Command when we went into the tournament in Montgomery, Alabama. And in that tournament, I pitched 2 games in 2 days and won both of them, something I didn't think I could do, but was able to do it, and to win the championship for our ball club. Then from there, I was transferred to Maxwell Field in Montgomery, Alabama, where we had a fine baseball team. A team of all pros. We had fellows like George Turbeville, Bill McCann, Royce Link, and myself doing the pitching for that club. And we played an 85-game schedule, winning 78 and losing 7. We played many pro teams also, teams mostly in the Southern League at that time. So we had quite a ball club there. And then after getting out of the service, I was over at Louisville after having a shot with the Red Sox in 57. I was sent on to Louisville, and it was there that I had a finger broken. The ball was hit back to the box by Andy Gilbert, and trying to defend myself with both my glove hand and my meat hand, the ball hit the meat hand, breaking the ring finger on my left hand, and of course that ended my season that year and caused me to have a finger that actually gave me some trouble throughout the rest of my career. Our Scranton team was really a fine team, and we got great support from the city of Scranton. It was a fine place to play ball. They had a great ballpark, and the fans were really behind the club all the way. We had the pleasure of playing for a manager, Elmer Yoder, who was pretty much like a father to each and every ball player, and of course that added encouragement to us. The Scranton team, known as the Miners, was a ball club that had great balance. We had a lot of talent, and we had some great reserves. It was just after the war when the Red Sox had an abundance of ball players coming back from service, and both the Louisville club and the Scranton club were just loaded with outstanding talent. And it was said by many who had the pleasure of seeing both ball clubs perform that they felt that the Scranton club was probably a better club than the Louisville club. And, of course, we on the Scranton club, we felt that we were better, too. While at Scranton, I had the misfortune of coming up with a bad arm. I popped a muscle in the back of my shoulder, which kept me out of action for about a month, maybe a little over a month of the season. Of course, that cut down on the many starts that I would have gotten over that season. However, I did get enough pitching in and was able to accumulate the 1.3 earned run average. And, of course, that I'm quite proud of and happy to be able to be the still holder of that honor in that league. My best pitch at that time was my fastball. I relied mostly on speed with a good curveball, occasionally changing speeds on both of them. But after I got to the majors, I started working on some other pitches, especially after getting into Fenway Park and seeing the short left field wall there. I figured that I needed more than just the fastball curveball and changing speeds on those two. So then I went to the slider and sinker. The slider was a pitch that I used some while I was at Scranton, but not too often. But when I got to the majors, I felt that it was a pitch that I would need a lot more, especially in the Fenway Park, a small ballpark, a tough ballpark for a left-handed pitcher. One trouble that manager Elmer Yoder had at Scranton was trying to select his starting pitchers, because we had such a fine collection of pitches that it really created a problem for him in getting a real starting rotation. We had fellows like Maury McDermott, Tommy Fine, Don Thompson, John Thompson, Wes Bailey, Bill Elbert, and a few others that were constantly coming in and out to our ball club, and this really did create a problem. Maury McDermott was a youngster with a great fastball. He pitched a no-hitter against Elmira, and a fellow that could really throw the fastball, and I'm sure that if he was pitching today and they'd clock his fastball, he'd be in about the mid-90s. We just had an abundance of real fine pitching. Of course, Tommy Fine set a record in the league that year. I think he had something like 23 wins against 3 losses. Tommy was really an exception. He was more mature than the rest of us, and he was a good, smart, heady pitcher. And Maury, of course, was a young kid. I was a young kid. Jocko Thompson was a little more mature than most of us. He went on with the Phillies. Don Thompson also went to the major leagues. Wes Bailey got a shot, and so did Bill Elbert. So we had a great collection of pitchers, and, of course, that great pitching staff was mainly responsible for our winning the pennant by 19.5 games. Our ball club in Scranton that year had, as I mentioned, a lot of great talent. We had Les Alls doing the catching for us. Len Kinsecki was at first base. Al Kozar playing second base. Danny Carnevale was at shortstop. Sam Dente was at third base. Then out in the outfield, we had Tommy West, and we had Mike Overduke, and, of course, a fellow that I'm sure many still remember, Sam Mealy, was playing center field for us. Mealy had a great year. He did just about everything that could possibly be done that year, winning the batting title for us, and he hit many long balls and made some great plays, and just about did everything that you could expect a young ball player to do. And of course, this rewarded him with a shot with the Boston Red Sox. As I mentioned, we just had a great collection of talent. Many of the other clubs had a lot of outstanding players around. I remember a fellow by the name of Bob Cazava, who was with Wilkes-Barre at the time, and then went up with the Yankees. Bob was an outstanding left-hand pitcher, had a fine major league career, and Bob was truly a winner. And of course, Jerry Coleman, who starred for the Yankees for many years, was over at Binghamton, Jerry was an outstanding player that could make the plays in the field for you, could handle a bat very well. And Don Mano, of course, all around that Eastern League area knew how well he could hit the ball. He was a fellow with great hitting ability. And Don, if he wouldn't have had some injuries that that kind of plagued him, I'm sure he could have gone on to be the real great one, too. There were many others around the league that went up, many that names kind of escaped me at the moment, but fellas like Cliff Mapes, who was a big outfielder, he went up with the Yankees and played very well, and there was just tremendous talent. It was just a good, outstanding league, as the Eastern League usually is every year. About the only tough part of playing in the Eastern League at that time was the long bus trips that we had. However, the long bus trips quickly wore off as we got into the various ballparks in various cities, as it was a league of fine cities with some real fine ballparks. I would have to believe that the best ballpark in the league was probably Albany, New York. Of course, Scranton's ballpark rated right with them. Elmira had a nice ballpark, and Hartford also had a fine ballpark, and the playing fields were well taken care of. They were real good playing fields, and any mishaps on those playing fields certainly wasn't the fault of the ballpark. It was our fault. Only one city in the league that I could be critical of, and that was Utica, New York. Utica had a very poor lighting system. It was very, very weak, and you really didn't get a good look at the ball while at the plate, and even balls hit deep to the outfield, you couldn't follow as well. Incidentally, that was the city in which Maury McDermott pitched his no-hitter, and on that night, Maury was extremely fast, and he just blinded all the hitters that walked to the plate. Dunmore Stadium there in Scranton was a fine ballpark. I understand that it was built over a garbage dump, which stood there some years before the ballpark was built. And because of that, it did offer a good drainage system to the ballpark. It seemed, though, that it was like a sieve. Water would just go through that soil quickly into that soft foundation that it had, and it presented a good playing field for us. And, of course, the foul lines were deep, and it was a deep outfield, and it certainly helped a lot of us in keeping the ball in the ballpark. The Eastern League certainly developed a lot of major league ball players, and the feeling throughout baseball at the time was that if you could play successfully in the Eastern League, you had a good shot of making the major leagues. And of course, that did prove true with the many ex-Eastern leaguers that did work their way up to the majors. There were some fellas there was a lot of closeness among the fellows that played with Scranton, because we felt that we all came out of one of the best farm clubs, and of course farm system baseball presented at the time. We felt awfully close to Scranton, because every time we'd go into New York, many of the Scrantonians would come over and visit us in New York, and we'd see a lot of old friends and everything, and that certainly kept us close with the city. And the Red Sox, among the Red Sox players, there was constant conversation about the fine facilities in Scranton and the people there, how well they treated us. And of course, seeing them when we went into New York just made our relations just that much closer. In all, playing in Scranton was a great pleasure for not only me, but I'm sure the many other Red Sox players that came up through Scranton in the Eastern League. Aside from all the fellows that I mentioned, there were many minor league standouts that can be remembered. Many were expected to become great major leaguers, but didn't make it. I recall one pitcher in particular, Ray Bessem at Wilkes-Barre, who was quite a pitcher. Ray was a right-hander that had great velocity on his fastball. All thought he would be a real good pitcher. I do think that he encountered some kind of arm trouble, and that was pretty much the reason for his not making it to the major leagues. And of course, that is something that happened to many along the line. Another fellow, Horace Brightman, also played with Wilkes-Barre. Horace wasn't one of the greatest hitters that I've seen, but to me, he was as good as any I pitched to, because it seemed as though he just wore me out. Every time I pitched against Wilkes-Barre, you could count on Horace Brightman getting his share of hits off me, but other pitchers would go out and have a much easier time with him. But there was just no way that I could really solve this fella, and this fella gave me a rough time. There was a big right-hand pitcher at Elmira, and I can't recall his name at the moment. He was built along the lines of a Vic Rashi, and he was quite a prospect. He, too, could throw the ball. Now his name comes to me. His last name was Rolla, R-O-L-L-A, I think he spelled it. He was a good-looking prospect, and he could throw the ball very hard, had a good fastball, had good breaking stuff, and we on the Scranton Ball Club felt that this fellow was going to make a fine pitcher and would eventually wind up in the majors, but along the line somewhere he got lost, and we never did get a chance to see him perform in the majors, but he was certainly a fine-looking pitcher when he was in the Eastern League.